Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens, I'm a business marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. And today we've got almost 5,000 participants around the world. If this is the first time you joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And if you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's really good to have you along again. In this episode, I'll be talking about the marketing function to Head of Marketing and Communications of Bird & Bird, Hayley Brooksbank, to the Director at Sales Process Engineering, Patrick Ray, and to Leadership, Business and Team Performance Coach, Carly Ferguson. Are you listening comfortably? Then we'll begin. Today, we continue our A to Z of business marketing. We're looking to give a primer on the very latest thinking, practices, and practical examples on every big topic in B2B land. And we've reached F, and F stands for function. Experts will talk on the topic today, starting with the Head of Marketing and Communications at Bird & Bird, Hayley Brooksbank. Hayley, welcome to the podcast, and over to you.
Thank you very much. Very glad to be here. And I'm very excited to talk you all through the glories of managing a multidisciplinary team in marketing and communications. So managing a multidisciplinary team can be challenging, but I wouldn't want it any other way. It comes with the territory of a wide and hopefully interesting remit. And of course, it develops the foundations skills for senior leadership. When you inherit a team, which let's face it is 99% of the time, you need to quickly assess the team's skill sets and structure. And when doing this, I look for two things. Firstly, who is fulfilling a technical job and who is stretching their technical capabilities into a strategic role? And secondly, are the team delivering to an overarching, consistent, relevant and clear strategy? In my experience, the latter is often significantly lacking. So then it comes to your own role as the leader of this motley crew. I find the first thing is to admit how little you know. You need the trust of your team, and you can't gain that by pretending to be more of an expert than they are if you're not. Admitting your lack of experience in the areas that you are less familiar with gives you the space you need to own the strategy, but we're not ready for that yet. The key part of managing a multidisciplinary team, especially within professional services where I work, is assessing to what degree your fabulous colleagues are in fact channel enablers. And by that, I mean they hold the keys to and only really exist because more important people in the business need someone who can drive the car to the destination they've already picked out. When your team are mainly channel enablers, this means they are the ones who can pick up the phone to a journalist, put something on the website, send out a newsletter, put on an event, you get the gist. They are almost entirely prevented from being trusted advisors, which, as we all know, is the Eldorado of all marketing teams. So once you've assessed the skill sets and worked out, but not as yet changed the structure and worked out the role the team play within the organization, you can just about start to think about the strategy. But so you can look impressive quickly and have some success, you can come out with a strategic framework and communicate that to the team and anyone else who will listen. My job remit teams usually fit into a three-pronged framework: brand strategy, channel strategy, and content strategy. This useful but currently empty vase can help you return back to those team members who are showing the glowing embers of strategic thinking and ask them what they feel should be done within each of those constructs. This in turn continues to build the trust you need to lead. You are asking them, listening to them, and treating them as trusted advisors. After all, you need them. So it's important you ensure that as often as possible, you follow up with support, advice, honesty, and transparency. And hopefully, when you can see the wood for the trees, clarity. There's a management phrase which I love, which is follow me, I'm right behind you. It's not about shirking responsibility. It's about giving your team members control and autonomy and letting them know that you've got their back. I always credit my team members with work that they have done. I always bring them into senior and board meetings to joint present whenever I can, because it helps them develop, makes them feel valued, and means that I can get them to do things that would otherwise fall to my to-do list. The more I step back, the more they shine, and the more I can focus on things I find interesting. So you see, I never have to be that technical expert, because in fact, they work for me. I know very little about PR and events. They're not an area I actively avoided, but I naturally migrated away from them to focus on brand. And I wouldn't know how to use the CMS of any website I've ever managed. But my team enjoy doing that. And because I trust them, they look after me. They don't just help me succeed. They make sure I don't fail. Now, I'm not an idiot. I'm a highly capable, experienced and downright talented when it comes to branding. And I find that branding, when done strategically and creatively, actually pulls everything else together. So I am actually, in the end, master of all I survey. Which links me nicely to another key point of managing your team: sharing your objectives. Don't hide them. Make sure your team knows what you're trying to deliver and get them to draft objectives which help with that. Also share the budget, let them know how the spending happens across the team, where value is found and where necessity lives. Not only to give them the opportunity to develop, but it also peels back the curtains, showing the working and providing the trust and transparency you need. And that leads me to another vital area, which is building empathy and removing barriers, both practical and emotional. The practical ones can be quite quick to sort out through the team structure. And my advice here would be to look for a structure that encourages collaboration, but more importantly, provides clarity. The defined remits of the various disciplines can help with that, but there will be grey areas for you to zoom in on. So to finish, I will cover one final conundrum that leading a multidisciplinary team leaves you with. You shape, teach, develop, and support your people to the point that they outgrow you and need to move on. After all, they can't have your seat, not just yet. So to delay the inevitable, I tell them that I know they're going to leave me and that I will help them to do that. I will do my best to prepare them for the next role. And what usually happens is they stay much longer, because you don't leave a job you're learning from. And helping your team members, especially the high potentials, to understand the remits of others, not enough to do their jobs, but enough to one day manage them. So I set up mini collaboration projects so colleagues can work on small fun projects with teammates they don't usually work with in the areas they don't usually get involved with. It works really help to develop your team and to build understanding and empathy, which all leads to a high performing and happy team full of people who will go on to effectively manage the multidisciplinary teams of the future.
Great advice there. Hayley Brooksbank, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Our next function expert is leadership, business and team performance coach, Carly Ferguson. Carly, welcome to the podcast and over to you.
Thank you so much. So yeah, I'm Carly and I work with individuals and their teams to help them to thrive and excel doing the work that they feel called to do. I'm also a human design specialist, which is really all about understanding your energy type and how best to work with that in order to fulfill your potential. I'm going to talk about how you can create a high performing team that thrives. But to begin with, I want you to ask yourself a question. Do you have a set idea of what your team should look like, behave like, work like, or are you willing to try something radical and let go of everything that you've ever been taught or shown? Because there is no one size fits all to managing a high performing team. And instead of looking to others for guidance or examples, it's really a time for throwing out the rule book and becoming firstly a very conscious leader who understands themselves and their own psychology at a very deep level so that you can then understand your team. And then having the courage to break outside of the expected norms and to reimagine what it means to manage a team. So I'm going to offer some new perspectives to help you break out of your old belief system and hopefully take away some ideas that you can adopt. So the first one is shifting from your team operating like a machine to a living organism. And I'll explain. So the old model for teams and businesses is to work like a machine. So everyone has their set roles and responsibilities, processes and rules are in place, and we motivate people with incentives. So that's bonuses, team outings, benefits, and salary increases. But this isn't what motivates people anymore. And it's caused many people to feel unfulfilled, out of alignment with their values, underutilized, constricted, frustrated. And I know this because these people are my clients and they tell me this. So what your team members are actually craving is freedom, freedom to be themselves, to work in alignment with their values, and to utilize their unique gifts and strengths in a meaningful way. Now, the evolved and conscious leader treats their team like a living organism, not a machine. So this means allowing individuals and the team to grow into whatever it wants to grow into, taking its inspiration from natural laws. So, for example, you don't try and get a tree to grow, it just grows. And you don't try and get a team to perform, it just performs. So you need to create the right environment for each of those to thrive. So you create the right environment for a tree to thrive, and you create the right environment for a team or a team member to thrive in a way that feels authentic to them. Now, these evolved teams have a life and a sense of direction of their own. So instead of trying to predict and control the future of the team, the manager is invited to listen in and understand what the team wants to become, what purpose it wants to serve. And this is called an evolutionary purpose. So this kind of team culture means that each person within it is encouraged to follow their own calling within the team. Now, this could mean going outside their original role description, or expanding beyond what you expected for them, or collaborating with other departments, for example. So this leads me on to point two, which is around conscious leadership and surrendering power. So again, the question for you, the manager, is, are you willing to surrender your power to the team? Because this is going to mean no longer controlling or steering the outcome in a specific direction. So this happens often. So ask yourself and answer honestly, how often have you gone through the motions of asking what your team thinks about something when you've already decided? So you have to trust the collective sensing of the group to come up with better answers than you could on your own. And this takes humility, it takes courage and trust for a leader to surrender power in this way. So this is why, to have a high performing team, you have to first do the work on yourself as a leader. Then this means eradicating any ego that's getting in the way, working on any conditioning or limiting beliefs that are holding you and the team back from what it could become. Because when you let people follow their desires and passions without constraints, they thrive, and therefore the team thrives. So a tip here is, when you're in meetings, is to really listen into those team meetings from the team perspective, not as a manager. So I call this second position, which is almost like you're looking into the meeting as another person, not yourself. And you can ask these kind of questions. So, you know, have the decisions and the discussions served you, the team, well? How are you at the end of this meeting as the team? In what direction do you want to go? At what speed? Are we being bold enough? Too bold? Is there something else that needs to be said or discussed? So number three is strategy as an organic process. Now, of course, we're still going to need a clear direction and a sense of the team's purpose and a broad sense of where it might be called to go. But having a more detailed map or plan, which is what we're used to, is actually going to limit possibilities to a narrow, pre-charted course. So with the purpose as a guiding light, everyone, individually and collectively, is empowered to sense what might be called for. So therefore, strategy happens organically all of the time, everywhere, as team members are toying with ideas and testing them out in the field. The team then evolves, morphs, and expands or contracts in response to a process of collective intelligence, as opposed to one person's intelligence or your intelligence. So reality is actually in charge, not you, the manager. And what works is going to gather momentum and energy within the team, and other ideas are going to fail to catch on and they're going to wither. But we as managers have to just let this happen. So number four is building on strengths and not fixing weaknesses. So what you might perceive as your team members' weaknesses might just be their superpowers. So just because it's not how you would do it doesn't mean it can't work for them. So for example, if you're someone who moves fast and gets a lot done in a short space of time, and a member of your team moves much slower and you get frustrated by that, ask yourself how that can be a strength. Are they able to see things that you and the rest of the team can't see because you're moving so fast? Now, understanding, honoring, and building on the strengths of your team and allowing them to evolve their role to play to these, as opposed to focusing on fixing their weaknesses, is another element of building a thriving team. 5, wisdom beyond rationality. So we don't have to rationalize and make sense of everything. So in marketing, everything is analyzed to an inch of its life. And if it doesn't show results in what seems like 5 minutes, we turn it off or treat it as a failed project. And I get it, we're being pressured from above to show results on everything. But what this does is dampen creativity and innovation because we're not listening to our inner wisdom. How can we start trusting our gut and intuition as a team and not rely too heavily on analytics? And there's a quote that I really like from Albert Einstein, and he said, "The intuitive mind is a sacred gift and the rational mind is a faithful servant, but we've created a society that honors the servant and has forgotten the gift." So how can you encourage that approach in your team? 6, be a coach, not a manager. Can you allow the team to self-manage itself and become their coach instead of their manager? This means stop automatically fixing their problems, helping them to see things and make decisions for themselves, encouraging them to step up and speak up for themselves. And again, it's often our ego that likes to be needed. So how can you encourage them to manage themselves? And lastly, I just want to leave you with this, that managing a team and work itself is a spiritual practice. So we have to do the work on ourselves to show up as the best manager you can be for your team. That means all of our insecurities, old trauma, etc., it's all going to come up for healing in a work environment for you and your team members. So if you can be a conscious role model, this is going to allow you to know what your team needs to thrive. So that's my tips on managing a thriving team. If you're interested in connecting, you can connect with me. My website is Carly Ferguson, carly-ferguson.com, and you can get me on Instagram at Carly Ferguson Coaching.
Carly Ferguson, thank you very much.
You are welcome.
Our third function expert today is the Director at Sales Process Engineering, Patrick Ray. Patrick, welcome to the podcast and over to you.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for that. Well, my theme for my brief segment is all about sales and marketing alignment, which many of you won't be surprised to know, having heard me speak before, if you have. I delivered the first CIM, Chartering Digital Marketing, one day course this week on account-based marketing, which was great fun and very interesting. And one of the central tenets of that is, of course, the alignment of sales and marketing with the buyer's own process. So it's getting a step-by-step process for marketing and selling that aligns directly with exactly how buyers buy in the real world. So sales and marketing alignment, all easier said than done. And I think as all we all know as seasoned marketing people, it can be a tough task. We've got different kind of priorities, training, mindset, etc. So part of my focus was, and my message for today is the importance of setting up meetings for sales and marketing teams to interface. And again, rather than just sort of sitting in a room and coming to blows, which is a situation I've seen on a number of occasions almost happening, it needs to be structured. So it needs to be structured in a way that it's constructive and with some real outcomes coming out of that meeting that can be acted upon positively. So it starts with planning the meeting. And as I say to people that I work with and train and to clients too, really having a very good structure for the meeting such that everyone's very clear on outcomes And we're ideally looking for three very positive outcomes in the session. And also that there's an opportunity for everyone to talk about their perspective on the business and on the sales and marketing process, and that everyone has the opportunity to contribute. But most important of all, there needs to be a framework for that sales and marketing process alignment, something graphic that everyone can buy into and quite easily understand, so that from each of those activities in the sales and marketing process, it's quite clear where the responsibilities lie at each stage, both in respect of the sales team, but also the marketing team. And also it's beneficial because you can see opportunities for working together for example, the deployment of the tech stack that marketing has, but also those strategic frameworks that sales have, such as use of spin models, insider trading, etc. So my kind of message for this session is to focus on the quality of the meetings that you have between sales and marketing. Arrange them so they occur on a regular basis. You don't want them too long, because clearly it's taking people away from other responsibilities and activities, and you want to keep them interesting and not boring. So whether that's on a bi-weekly basis or even a monthly basis, but it's the quality of your meetings which really does warrant some particular attention.
Patrick Ray, thank you very much. And that's it for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, to Hayley Brooksbank, to Patrick Ray, and to Carly Ferguson. And thanks to our technical team from Through the Eye of Scott Jackson, Andrew Gratian, Alex Horn, and Josh Bench. Most of all, though, thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. Just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk. I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.